22nd of January, 2017, in Melbourne, Australia. Would you like to help me again? Your friends will help you too. We're going to talk about motivating our children to do a variety of devotional service. Can you give one of these to everybody? Can you go give everybody one paper? And can you give everybody one paper? All right, very good. That's excellent. Just go back, all to those nice ladies back there. You don't need to give to the other children, it's okay. You're going to give it back? You can give it to one of the ladies there. Hey, give it to, you just give it to them. You don't need to give it back to me.
You can go
first. Okay. All right, well, first we're going to look at what our children say they want to do. And what are the kind of things our children say that they want to do? Play. What else?
Watching TV.
Watching TV. That's it? Playing, watching TV, nothing else?
They want to help in the kitchen.
Want to help in the kitchen? Huh? They want to help making garlands. They want to help with shopping. Yeah, a lot of kids like to shop. They like to eat, yeah? Okay. Especially sweets, right? Anything else that they say they want to do?
Doing their homework.
Do they say they want to do their homework?
No.
They're very interesting children. Mommy, can I do my homework? Okay, they'd like to do whatever, they want to copy whatever their parents are doing. Wow, that is a very big garland. Thank you. Whose garland is this? Do you know? Valuable garden. Wow. Very special. Yes?
Play with a friend?
Play with a friend. Okay, very much. Thank you. So what else do you children like to do since we have so many children here? Yes?
Watch cartoons and play.
Watch cartoons and play. Okay. And hopefully get your teeth. Oh, another question. So if we think about it, we can think about many services that would also be like that for the children. There are a lot of services that can be playful. There are a lot of services that are involved with stories and with dramas. There are a lot of services that are involved with food. So we want to connect the needs and the desires of the children to the service that they want to do. And Srila Prabhupada says this quite often, that we should do service according to our personal taste. So according to the things that we really enjoy, according to the things that we really like, we should do that kind of service. Then we also want to look at, because we all have different needs that we want to fulfill. We want to fulfill needs for play, for friendship, for learning, right, for making our own decisions in life. So if we can find a way that our children can get those needs met in doing some service. So in other words, we don't want to look at, well, such and such a service needs to be done. Let me just find somebody to do it. That's all right sometimes, but our general move with our children is, what do they enjoy doing? What kind of work fulfills their own needs and their own desires? And how can I get them to do that for Krishna? Then the same is true of our child's personality. So I'm sure some of you have studied things about personality styles. Yes? So some people are very outgoing. Some people are very reserved. Some people like working on jobs. Some people prefer to be with other people. Some people are very cautious, some people are risk takers, some people are detail oriented, some people are big picture oriented. Okay? And then there's different talents that we have. Prabhupada says everyone has some extraordinary talent, and to use our talent for Krishna is successful life. So to see what kind of talents your children have. Now that starts to be obvious actually at quite a young age. And generally our children's talents in nature are the things that might sometimes annoy us. Because someone's nature doesn't go away. You can't discipline a person out of their nature. You can't talk them out of their nature. You can't train them out of their nature. So if your child behaves in a way that you have tried to say, no, don't be like this, and they keep being like this, especially if it goes on for years, you're probably looking at something with their nature. Now, why is this often, is the person's nature often annoying as a child? Because they don't know how to use it. They haven't been trained how to use it. Does that make sense to everybody? Just a simple example from my own life. When I remember very clearly when I was going to preschool, to nursery school. I think I started when I was 3. And it was a joke in my house for years. I mean, I just remember hearing it the whole time I was growing up. That, oh, you know, when you went to nursery school when you were 3 and 4, the teachers complained about you all the time. They would say, you know, why can't she be one of the students? She's always trying to be the assistant teacher. And the way my parents presented it to me was always as a problem that I should fix, that I should stop trying to be the teacher. Nobody, as in not one person, ever said to me when I was growing up, maybe you're a teacher. Maybe you should look at that as a career. You know, nobody said that to me. They just said, stop trying to be the teacher. Isn't that peculiar? It wasn't until I was in my 20s, and by the Lord's grace, I met one of my god sisters, Jyotir Mayi, that I would discover, oh, I'm a teacher. But it was obvious to my parents from the time I was 3, they just didn't see it. They saw it as a problem. Right? And I know one young man whose parents and siblings are always telling him, stop minding everybody's business. He gets told this probably between 5 and 10 times a day. And when I was visiting there, I said, you know, there's a lot of jobs in the world where your job is to mind other people's business. And somebody who's really good at that, somebody who's really good at noticing what everybody's doing, they'd say to him, why don't you just focus? But he's not a focused person. He's a big picture, broad angle vision person. And thankfully, he's gotten to do some services that use that ability, and he started to see himself as somebody that has something to offer in Krishna's service. So it's often the things that our children that we find annoying, that we find disruptive, that no amount of instruction or discipline will get them to stop doing, that are indicative of their nature. Because our nature is something we do like breathing. We do it whether anybody asks us to do it or not. We do it whether or not we get paid. We may not even be aware that we're doing it. It's just so natural for us. So you want to look for things like that in your child. And you want to then find, well, what kind of occupation, what kind of service would this be an asset? Instead of thinking, in what situation is it a problem? When I was working in an American government school, public school, and this is a sad story, it doesn't have a happy ending, I'm afraid. So I was there as an assistant principal. And one teacher came to me and said, I have a big problem with one of the students. I said, oh, what is that? And she said, well, every time a guest comes to the room, he jumps out of his seat and disrupts the class to say hello to the guest. And every time another child is having a problem, he jumps out of his seat and disrupts the class to help the other child. If somebody needs their pencil sharpened, you know, somebody breaks their pencil, he jumps out of the seat and goes to sharpen their pencil for him. And I'm constantly having to tell him to get back in the seat. I'm constantly saying to him, hey, I'm the teacher here. I have the degree, you sit down. And she was so upset about it that she called a meeting with his parents. And I had to be there. Is it possible for someone to bring me some water? And so I said to this teacher, why don't you just make this child the official guest reader and the official class helper and train him how to do it properly? Train him how to greet guests, train him how to help the other students so it's not a disturbance. And unfortunately, she wasn't at all receptive to that idea. She just said, no, he's a bad boy. So unfortunately, we tend to think like this. If the child's nature is being used in an inappropriate way, or if the child has a nature very different to our own. So I know an instance, again, this doesn't have a happy ending, where the mother, who's a devotee, she's a very reserved, detail-oriented, task-oriented, cautious person. And one of her children is a high risk-taking, thrives on variety and change, people person. And the mother said to her daughter, how are you ever going to be Krishna conscious if you're so frivolous? You have to be a lot more serious. And the girl came to me when she was about maybe 14, and she said, I really can't be a devotee because I've tried to change my personality and I just can't do it. But somehow the mother had communicated to her that in order to be Krishna conscious, she had to be materially a certain kind of person. So instead what we want to do is we want to match our child's innate nature. And my dear friends, there's no innate nature that's inherently bad. It's what you do with it that makes it good or bad. It's not by itself, it's not bad. Being a risk taker isn't bad. You know, go preach in Saudi Arabia if you're a high risk taker, but don't manage the temple accounts. You understand? So it's, you know, things are good and bad depending on how they're used and where they're used. So you want to try to find some service for your child, which is using their nature, which is, thank you so much, which is using their talents, which is using their abilities. And as we talked about yesterday, which is also a service that's truly valuable for the community. Not just something to keep them busy. Here, let me keep you busy so we can do things that are important. I imagine how that feels to somebody. Children are persons, they have feelings. If I say to you, okay, we're just going to keep you busy so you cannot bother us, so we'll do something important without you. So you want to give the children something, and you can do it from quite a young age, something that's truly valuable. We have a list here of different kinds of intelligences. Perhaps some of you have heard of the idea that there's 7 kinds of intelligences. By the way, we don't mind children. We don't mind children. If children didn't make any noise, they're probably sick or something. It's fine. It's fine. Seriously, it's fine. If we can't have children in a seminar about children, that's really... If any of you can't handle children's noises, you are in the wrong seminar. Okay, so we have a little list here of different sorts of intelligences. And this is the work of some psychologists. But the idea, it's just to give you some idea that there's different kinds of talents. There's different ways of looking at the world. In school, we mostly honor people who have verbal and mathematical intelligence. But some people have kinesthetic or body intelligence. Some people are expert gymnasts and dancers and athletes. and they may not be that good with words. You know, I'll hear parents saying to me, well, my child's a little slow. Well, slow in what? I mean, of course, some people are handicapped in everything. But generally, people have something that they're particularly good at. You know, somebody who may not be that school smart may be people smart. I mean, we've all read of people in the world who are highly successful in their field, even if they didn't do well in school, correct? To have this idea that the only way you can be a successful human being is to get good grades in school and be an IT professional or a medical doctor. So that's not actually the fact. I mean, it's very nice in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about that we have our nature. He talks about this particularly in the 3rd chapter, and then he talks about it again in the 18th chapter. He says we all have our nature. And he says our nature can't be repressed. And he says our nature can't be changed. It's a question of what we're going to do with our nature. And Krishna gives us 2 broad categories of what we can do with our nature. We can use it for him. You're welcome to do that as long as you put it back when you're done. Okay? Here you go. You can play with it. Just when you're done, put it back the way it was, okay? So Krishna gives us 2 broad categories, and he says we can use our nature for him and his service, or we can use our nature for illusion. Then in illusion, we can use our nature in goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? Those are familiar with the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna talks about these modes of nature at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, especially in chapters 14, 17, and 18. So what we want to teach our children to do is how to use their nature in the mode of goodness or in transcendence, not to try to repress their nature and take another nature. Then to find some services to do doesn't necessarily mean what's already going on. Lord Chaitanya's movement, Prabhupada said, is not narrow or stereotyped. And there's a whole broad range of services that can be done that nobody's doing right now. I mean, when our youngest son was 7 years old, he decided to start a business selling school supplies to the Gurukul students. So nobody was doing that. It wasn't that he helped some adult with it. He started his own little service. And then later on, when he was about 12 or 13, he decided that the songbooks in the temple needed to be redone. They were falling apart. They didn't have a complete list of songs. So he went to one of the adults, and he worked with one of the adults, and they created a whole new songbook. And in the process, he learned a lot about layout. He learned a lot about fonts, he learned a lot about printing. So they created that service. You understand what I'm saying? It wasn't like someone else was doing it, but it was something that he created. And parents can also look for something like that. Just recently in New Zealand, one parent was trying to think of how to engage her child, and she realized he loves listening to songs about Krishna's pastimes. And he loves acting in dramas. And she thought, I can engage him in making audio dramas. So again, it wasn't going on in the temple. It's not that it was something that was happening that she was plugging him into. It was something that she created with him. Do you all understand what I'm saying? Okay, what I'd like you to do right now is I'd like you to work either on your own, or if you want to work with someone next to you, that's fine. And make a list of as many services that you can think of that we could be engaging children in our community. That could be things that's already happening, and could also be things that nobody's happening that the children can either do or that they could work with. Okay, so we could take about 5 minutes for that. You can write it on the papers that you have.
Are the children of which age group?
You can decide that. You know, you can decide, is it going to be like 4 to 7, or 8 to 12, or 12 and up? Pick your category.
8 months?
No, I don't think so. Sorry. The only thing they can do at 8 months is entertain us and fill us with happiness with their smiles and their funny noises. And they can honor Prasad. But as far as doing service for the community, they can fill us with happiness. As long as we don't find them annoying. Decorating the cart, putting garlands on the cart, making the decorations. I saw today people making the decorations. It was only adults, but it looked rather simple. It looked like something the children could have been helping with. What?
Taking them on Harinam.
Taking them on Harinam, okay.
Engaging in plays.
In dramas.
Selling or making the clothes for the deities at
home. Helping to make clothes for the deities, yes. Creating the backgrounds and stuff. As far as, what did you just say?
Dramas.
So when one of my grandsons was 6 years old, he wrote a script that we used for a drama. So it wasn't just in it, but actually wrote the script. Yes?
Assisting in
Goshala,
like once in a while,
so helping with the cows at the Goshala. Yes?
Serve devotees.
Like what kind of service?
Like cleaning their house.
Oh, like going to devotees' house and helping clean their house for them, maybe especially if they're sick or something. That would be really nice. I know in New Zealand there's one young man, one of the young devotees, who cuts the grass and mows the lawn for the devotees as a service. Yes?
Can I say something that... I like devotional service.
Yes, of course you can.
Cleaning temple room.
You like to clean the temple room. That's right.
Book distribution.
Do you go out on book distribution?
Me too.
You do too?
I go with him.
You go with him?
Sometimes.
Who distributes more books, you or him? He does. So listen, when you distribute more books than him, send me a message and tell me. Any other ideas? Yes. Making their own altars, yes.
I had a last one.
Oh, yes, what's that?
Attending Guru Puja.
Attending Guru Puja, very nice. Then you can also learn how to offer arti, especially you can offer the Tulsi arti sometimes. I don't know what the temple allows, but if the temple allows, the children can offer arti to Tulsi if they're old enough to deal with the fire. And leading the kirtans. Something else? Yes? Sell sweets. And the children can also make sweets. You know, even young children can prepare simple foods. Want to speak of when they're older and they can have like a bake sale for the temple, yes? I'm sorry, what?
Playing musical instruments
and singing for the kirtans, and especially really becoming expert in some of the instruments. Something else. Okay, so we're not going to have time to talk about this, but I thought at least we would pass these out, and you can look at these at your leisure. Who would like to pass these out? Would you like to pass these out again? No, we'll let you pass them out this time. Okay. We'll let our book distributors do it. Okay. So this is three different points in the Bhagavad Gita, and please don't look at it now. Please just take it with you. And if you don't have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, we have some here. Do we have someone who can sell the books?
Yes.
Okay, so how much is the Bhagavad Gita for?
$10.
Very cheap. Beautiful pictures and stuff. So if you don't already have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, I do suggest that you get one for only $10. Okay. So I want to go over some of the questions that people gave me yesterday that we didn't get a chance to answer yesterday. Some of these were really excellent questions. question. How do I maintain cleanliness with kids and a baby at home while having deities? Well, generally, it's not possible when you have a baby in nappies. Is it called nappies or diapers? Nappies. So usually if you have a baby in nappies, you're not going to be very clean for the deities. And what you need to do then is, you know, take care of either the person who's not changing the nappies takes care of the deities, or, you know, you give your child a bath and put clean clothes on them, and then you take care of your deities, and once you start changing nappies, then you don't touch the deities anymore that day. So at least you wouldn't touch the bodies of the deities after you change the nappies. As far as, you know, the standards in our home for our worship are not exactly the same as the standards in the temple. You know, my kids often like to sit on the kitchen counter and watch me cook. So you wouldn't exactly do that in the temple. Although I was able in the Philadelphia temple, when my daughter was quite young, I would put her in a backpack. So as soon as she was potty trained, but she was so very young, a year and a half maybe. So, you know, I'd give her a bath, put clean clothes on, put her in my backpack, and cook with some diffuse. Yes, I did. Unfortunately, in the backpack, in that kitchen, there were cooking utensils hanging from hooks. So she would pull them off the hooks and hit me on the head with them. Which was slightly inconvenient when I was trying to cook. At what age can we involve the kid in deity worship at home, as when they're out of nappies, and when you can tell them not to put your fingers in their mouth? Once they're at that point, if any of you are my Facebook friends or follow me on Facebook, I have a photograph there of myself with one of my granddaughters on my lap. I'm doing puja at home. So she started helping me when she was a little bit over a year old.
You know, if you want to do that, can you go to the back of the room and do that? Okay. So if you want to do that, you guys can go to the back room. All right? And not do that here? Is that okay? If you want to sit here, please.
So again, that depends on the maturity of the kid. It depends on the cleanliness of the child. But she was helping me for about a year and a half. When once a week I would do a more extended puja, so I did puja every day, but when I did more extended puja once a week, so she did not. She is now initiated and with her own deities. When our kids don't listen, can we smack hit them for discipline as a last option? It's interesting because Srila Prabhupada talked about how a father can give his child a strong slap out of love. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada was totally against using physical punishment. But I will tell you, physical punishment is not the best way of getting anybody to do anything most of the time. It's not a very effective means of training anybody to do anything. So if it's something that's done more than on extremely rare occasions for extremely serious things, it's not going to have much of an effect except to have a relationship of fear between you and the child. There's a talk that I give, which you can find on the internet, about 8 ways to change behavior. And there's 8 different ways of disciplining children. Using physical force with children should be something quite rare, if at all. I mean, with my own parents, my father hit me twice in my life. How many hours of sleep is enough for kids? That is such an individual thing. Depends if they're going through a growth spurt. Right? What's going on in their life? When I was traveling with one of my grandsons, every time there wasn't some big activity going on, he was falling asleep. I couldn't figure out why. And then near the end of the trip, he broke his toe. We had to take him to the doctor, and they measured him. and I don't know this in centimeters, but he went from 5 feet 7 inches to 6 feet 2 inches in about 6 months. He went from a size 9 shoe to a size 13 shoe. That's American sizes, so I don't know how that translates. Again, in those 6 months. So he just needed to sleep a lot. You know, he was eating 3 humongous meals a day. Once I realized how much he was growing, I'm like, oh, no wonder he was growing. This is a very thoughtful and an interesting question. Sometimes it's very hurtful when we notice some devotee children get deviated from the spiritual path after many years. What can we as a community, how can we collectively help that family? So I don't think anyone's ever asked you that question before. You know, often when a family goes through some kind of difficulty, what we tend to do is isolate ourselves from them because we don't know how we can help them. You know, it's quite common. I was reading the other day about one gentleman who lost his pregnant wife died in a car accident. He was left with himself and his 2-year-old child. He had been driving, the car went out of control and went into a lake, and they just trying to break the window to get his wife out, couldn't get his wife out, she died. And nobody in his community would talk to him. They were all avoiding him because they didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to help. And he was very isolated and very lonely. So I think the main way that we can help people when they're going through any kind of difficulty is just be friends with them. Just be nice to them. And, you know, but be a shoulder for them to cry on, or be somebody to do things with them. And don't isolate them. You know, I hear this from people a lot. They go through some kind of a tragedy, whether it's their child makes bad decisions in life, or somebody gets really sick, or somebody dies, or somebody gets really, whatever, gets really hurt. And people just withdraw because they think, well, I don't know what to do. You don't have to do a whole lot. Just be a friend. And spend some time with the person. And gradually in time, people will see how to move on. Don't expect that everybody can move on from a difficulty immediately. Okay, we have a number of people who ask these kind of questions. Kids going into normal school get in touch with other kids who are exposed to a lot of gadgets, movies, screen times on iPods and phones. How do we then convince our children to not indulge in these? Do we allow them a bit of these or be strict to not allow it at all? Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you don't allow it at all in your home, they're going to still do it outside of the home. Even with other devotees, they don't have to go to an outside school unless you just lock them in your house all day. They will have some exposure to these things. So I think it behooves us to decide how and when we want our children to use the modern media. Trying to get them not to use any media would be almost impossible. You know, really, the best advice is like lock them in your house and don't have any media in your own house. So it's much more a question of teaching them how to use it responsibly than not having it at all. But for very young children, like the American Academy of Pediatricians suggests no screen time at all for children from birth to 2, and only 1 to 2 hours a week from ages 2 to 5. And then maximum about an hour a day at that age 5. So this is just non-devoting pediatricians who are suggesting this for purely physical and biological reasons because of the way that the brain is maturing and developing. And a lot of these effects on the brain are permanent. So if you allow screen time for children under the age of 2, you are giving them permanent changes in the way that the brain works. There's nothing you can do later to fix it. So my own suggestion is be really, really strict about these things when your kids are little. And if you make an exception, then pretty soon it's all finished. If it's, you know, well, I'm tired today, or he's tired, or then pretty soon the kids are on the screens, you know, 10 hours a week, and pretty soon it's 3-4 hours a day. And that's what I've seen over and over. Now, once they're older, like this person is asking, and they're in school, they're exposed to some stuff, I personally think kids need to learn how to use technology, need to learn how to use it in Christian service and use it responsibly. That's the world we're living in. If you don't want to live in this world, you know, I don't know, where are you going to go and where are you going to find where this isn't there? You can go in a remote village in the Himalayas and it's there. You know what I'm saying? Where is it you're going to go? What kind of, so if you want to try to find a place, you know, where there's no cell phone and there's no internet and you want to raise your children there and you want to live without those things. But if you're going to live in Melbourne, and this is where you're living and this is where you're working, then it's more a question of teaching your children how to deal with the world in which they live. And that should be done slowly and carefully and gradually. Not because all the other kids are doing it, but because this is what we're doing. I taught my kids how to use a phone, how to order a ticket, how to call a store, you know, how to look up things. I mean, I used to teach them how to look up things in the book of the telephone directory. And you know what that is. So I taught them how to do those kinds of things because those were the skills that were necessary at that time. They need to know practical skills. Should children be made to attend Mangalarti in temple or home? If yes, from what age onward? Well, the radical answer from Srila Prabhupada is to bring your children from the very beginning of their life. That was Srila Prabhupada's very radical answer. He said, we welcome first day babies in the Bhagavatam class. And Prabhupada talked about nursery school children. So certainly he talked about this from age 2, bringing the children to the morning program. When he talked about running a nursery school, he said the main thing we're teaching them is to rise early and attend Mangalarti. Which is, again, very radical. That would mean for some children going to bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Anyway, I'm very happy to see that here in Melbourne that every morning there's children at Mangalarti. Not a lot, but there are some, and at meeting every day, I'm seeing some children, so I find that very enlightening. As far as the way this person wrote it, should children be made to attend Mangalarti? Well, if you're going, what are you going to do? Leave your children at home alone? If you're going, you're going to go too. Yes, correct? So this is true with anything. If you're going to the store, you're going to take your children with you. And you wouldn't say, should I make my children go to the store? No. If you're going, they have to go. You're not going to leave them home alone. So similarly, if you're going to Mangalarti, they're going to go. You're not going to leave them alone. And if you're going to have some program at home, yes, Prabhupada talked about having the children from a very young age. But do keep in mind what we talked about yesterday about positive emotional experiences. So if you're going to be doing these things as some kind of religious ritual with some sort of force and threatening and like that, it's not going to be very favorable. Okay, the next question that people, that somebody wrote. So by the way, this is a seminar about raising children and we're answering random questions. For those of you just walking. This is a similar question. How do we keep our child away from gadgets? You know, the way I used to answer this question years ago was just find the box, go to the back of the box, find the cord, follow the cord to the wall, pull the cord out of the wall, take the box and throw it out the window. But now there's lots of little boxes all over the place. You know, it's not such an easy thing to do anymore. It's hard to answer this question because I don't know how old the child is. So, you know, if it's a very young child, it's not that difficult to keep young children away from your gadgets. Just don't give them to the child. You understand? I mean, if I'm visiting a family, the children won't ask to play with my phone because I don't give them my phone, so they don't ask me. And if you're going to sit around in front of your children playing games on your phone, of course they're going to want to play games on the phone. Duh, right? If I'm sitting here, Can I play too?
No.
It's not going to work very well. And then as far as older children, you know, you try to have other exciting things going on in your life. And I know some families where they have, you know, they have a night where the family cooks together, they have a night where the family plays board games together, they have a night where the family reads together, and then they have maybe one night a week when the kids can do some things on their gadgets. So, you know, again, this is thinking of how to teach the children to use technology in a responsible manner. But these things are, the problem is more for the parents, that the parents think, my kid's driving me crazy, you take this to the point. That's really the problem, my dear friends, much more than the kids. It becomes a problem from the kids when the parents use the gadgets as babysitters. Am I correct? It's a weakness on the part of the parents. And once the parents give in to that weakness, then you have a problem with the children. But it's a parent-created problem. It's not a child-created problem. Should we force our child to chant? Definitely not. Never force your children to do anything in the spiritual life. Then you're going to have this negative emotional experience thing. Does that mean you can't have expectations? I mean, look, you tell your kids to go to school, right? Do you force them to go to school? Does anybody here force their children to go to school?
Normally we force them to go to school.
What?
Normally we force them
to go to school. Do you force? Do you actually force? I want you to think about this for a minute. You don't give them an option, but do you force? Yeah, you know, I hope you don't go to your kids and say, sorry, this probably wasn't very relevant for you. Thank you for coming by. Hopefully you don't go to your kids and go, you better go to school or I'm going to hit you. I hope none of you deal with your kids that way. But you do say to them, you know, you got to go to school. So you can say, you know, this is our family prayer time and we expect you to participate. Exactly how you're going to participate, you know, that we can discuss, but this is what we're doing. Just like you can say we have a family meal, we expect you to sit down and eat. Do you force your children to eat? Do you like go, So, Prabhupada was very, very clear that force and punishment are never allowed for spiritual things. Does that mean that while you're sitting down having a kirtan, your children should be allowed to run around the house screaming? I mean, okay, if they're 8 months old, sure, whatever. But if they're, you know, 3, 4, 5, you're going to let them run around the house screaming when you're sitting down having a kirtan? No. Would you let them do that when you're having a meal? I hope not. Or if you're having guests over? Does that mean you're forcing? So try to think about this. How do you get your kids to brush their teeth? Do you force them to brush their teeth?
Brush your teeth, kiddo. Here you go, you better brush your teeth.
I mean, do you do that with your kids? How do you get them to brush their teeth? Don't you expect them to brush their teeth? Do they have the option? Can they say, well, I'm not going to brush your teeth, they go, sure, fine, whatever. Do you do that? You just go, well, that's fine, that's cool, you don't have to brush your teeth. Do you do that? No, they have to brush their teeth, right? I hope. Yes? Your kids have to brush their teeth, they have to put their clothes away, whatever. Right? But do you force? If you're using force for those things, then please read some book about parenting. Because you shouldn't be forcing. It shouldn't be a power struggle for the kids to brush their teeth and get dressed and eat and go to school. These should be things that are just part of life. And spending some time with the Lord should be part of life. It should be part of what we do as a family and part of what people are expecting to do. And in the same way that it's not like an option that you're not going to brush your teeth, or you're not going to go to sleep, you're not going to go to school, you're not going to get dressed. But it shouldn't be an atmosphere of force and punishment. I mean, force and punishment should be there for something like running in front of a car on the street. You understand? That's what we're going to talk about, force. Your kid starts running in front of a car, you just grab them. You don't worry about their feelings. Oh, they might not like it if I grab them. Well, then they're going to like it a lot less if they get hit by a car again. So, something like that. But otherwise, we should, our dealings with our children should not be on the basis of force. In general, kids don't listen. That's this question. Kids don't listen. Yes, that is true. And I brought this up a little bit yesterday, that none of us totally listen. Is there anybody here that fully listens to themselves? Talked about this. Anybody here? Anybody here completely do what they know that they should do? When we got up this morning, we said, I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. Do you always do everything on your list of what you want to do that day? No. And it's not always because you couldn't either, is it? It's not always, I absolutely couldn't get everything done. Isn't that a fact? So I don't always listen to myself. I don't always follow my own good advice. Does anyone here always follow their own good advice? So why in the world do we expect other people to always follow our own good advice? If I don't even follow all my own good advice. Is that reasonable? Right? Is that reasonable? It's sort of absurd. I don't even listen to my own self. I'm only going to eat one piece of cake. And then I eat two. So if I don't listen to myself and I don't follow my own ideals, how in the world do I think I can demand that somebody else follows everything that I say? That's not going to happen. And in fact, the reality is not set up as some kind of machine. You know, like we have a machine here, and the machine is supposed to do what I say, and the machine doesn't do what I say. It's broken. Right? If I press the button and it doesn't turn on, then I have to take it to the repair. But a living being is not like that. A living being is not, you push a button and they turn on. And the spiritual world is not full of machines. There's no machines in the spiritual world. There's only living beings. And a living being means that the living being can say no. And the living being can have another idea. And this happens even in Goloka Vrindavan. Krishna says, Radharani, I want to dance with you. And she says, I'm going to dance with you. That actually happens. That actually happens. The coward boys say to Krishna, I can beat you up. What do you think you mean? It's a relationship between living beings. So we should remember with our children that it's a relationship. Okay, we're in the superior position. We have more knowledge. We have more experience. We have more wisdom. But they're still a living being. And they have free will, which is the essential aspect of a living being. And we need to work with them. We need to work with them. Not just trying to impose our will upon them. Krishna does not impose his will on living beings. Now, we have to impose our will on our children sometimes when they're in a situation of danger or when they're extremely small. But as they grow, it should be less and less a question of I am trying to force my will onto you. And it should be much more, hey, how do you feel? What do you want? Let's see if we can negotiate this. Let's see if we can work this out. You know, and you can sometimes say things to your kid, you know, that you're making a good point. I hear what you're saying. I hear you're saying this and this and this, but I'm just not comfortable with that. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry I'm asking you, to do this, and these are my reasons. Well, I don't agree with you. Well, you know what? You don't have to agree with my reasons. I'm the one responsible for you. I wish you would agree with my reasons, but I'm the one responsible for you. And I just don't feel comfortable letting you do this. You can deal with them like they're a human being. They're a subordinate human being. They may be a somewhat foolish human being. They're an inexperienced human being. They're not such a sense-controlled human being, but they're still a human being. So if kids are regularly and consistently not listening, then we're probably not dealing with them as if they're a human being. We're probably just trying to impose our will on them. And anyone who tries to impose their will on us will put us into a rebellious mode. This is true individually, and it's true in terms of whole countries. If we think about the former Soviet Union, you know, for generations, a country like that is just trying to force their will onto their citizens. For generations. And as soon as they pull back and give the citizens freedom, immediately the citizens rebel against the way that they were forced. Isn't that a fact? Immediately. Even if it's generations. We don't respond well to someone else trying to force their will on us. So that should not, that's not Krishna consciousness, actually. I mean, who does that? Despots and dictators, right? Evil folks. That's what they do. People who are saintly and people who are godly find ways to get people to cooperate with them and respect them by respecting those people. Now, that doesn't mean just that your kids are your buddies, but you still want to deal with them respectfully. We don't have the energy to match with their energy. Yes, I think we all noticed that one. How to improve children's concentration? Well, very young children aren't supposed to have concentration. So it depends. I don't know what the age of this person, the age of his children. Very young children have a wide lens. The way the brain and the consciousness of a very young child works is they take in everything. And they are not able to focus very well. That's why you can distract little children so easily, thankfully. Right? One of the main ways of dealing with young children is just to distract them. And that's because they don't have a lot of focus. They don't have a lot of focus because they're learning like crazy. And so they're taking in every, just wide open everything. And gradually, they start getting an ability to focus. You know, most of the world, an actual education for children starts somewhere between 5 and 7 years old. And there's a reason for that. Like Prabhupada said, until they're 5, they should just be able to run and play. If you can have a nursery school, but it should be a play-based nursery school. It shouldn't be an academic-type nursery school. But we don't expect children under the age of 5 to be able to focus for more than 15 or 20 minutes. If they can, great, but we don't expect that. You know, some children can on certain things. And then from 5 to 7, you start expecting some focus. You know, if you go to a school, you'll see that the schools don't expect 5, 6-year-old children to focus for much more than 20 or 30 minutes, at the most. Then at 7, then they can actually really start focusing for some time. And to try to force focus before that, they can't really do it. It's not how they're designed. You know, and real focus doesn't come until puberty. The ability to have really sharp focus doesn't come until that time. But then that wide-angle learning starts getting shut down also. So each has its place in the development of a human being. Now, one thing that's really hurting our ability to focus nowadays is the modern media. So if your kids are having a lot of trouble focusing as they get older, then you may be having a problem with media. Because what the media does, in order to get us to pay attention and be interested, it changes the frame very fast. Because the way our brains are programmed is if there's very sharp movement, it might be something threatening. And so we go on alert. You understand? If something in our range of vision moves very quickly, you know, it might be something dangerous, so we go on alert. And so what they've done in the TV shows and the movies and the video games is they change the camera angle and the focus every like 10 seconds. And this constant change keeps us interested in something that frankly would otherwise be very boring. If the shows didn't do that and the games didn't do that, we would lose interest in them very quickly. Because what was going on in our real life would be more interesting. But the downside of those things is they really hamper our ability to focus. You know, it interferes with how the brain works. So if your kids are having trouble concentrating, cut way down on media. Okay, kids want to imitate their classmates who are not devotees. You know, we really need to have a school here in Melbourne, Holy Six. Somebody needs to take this up as their mission to make a devotee school here, because not everybody's going to want to homeschool. So I think it's one of the... You have so many kids here, and so many kids whose parents are really interested in devotional lives. I think it's one of our priorities to make a school here. Otherwise, the only answer to this is what we talked about yesterday, those four keys. But they may not be enough. How to stop a kid gently for doing the wrong thing. So again, I have a seminar on this online. I don't have time to get into it tonight. Younger kids do whatever the elders are doing, whether the elders are doing good things or bad things. How to handle that? We don't do bad things. And if you do bad things, your kids will imitate it and you don't live with it. What do you want me to say? You can't do bad things and tell your children not to do bad things. It's not going to work. Good luck. My biggest challenge is to make Krishna consciousness fun for my child, as I would be a very strict parent. But Krishna's fun, guys. If you're making Krishna not fun, then it's not Krishna. I don't know who it is, but it's not Krishna. Krishna's a kid. Right? In Vrindavan, he never gets older than 15. He's fun. Even in Vaikuntha, he's not older than 20. He's fun. Our understanding of God is he's ever youthful. He's fun. He's playful. He plays tricks on people. He's very, very, very playful. So if you're doing Krishna consciousness, it's not fun, it's not Krishna consciousness. I don't know what it's consciousness of, but not Krishna. I mean, even Lord Shiva's young and playful, when to speak of Krishna. So if your idea of Krishna consciousness is be very strict and don't have fun, and whatever it is you're conscious of, it's not Krishna. Because it's not what he does. He stands up on a big eagle and flies all over outer space. That's the kind of thing he does. You understand? He steals butter and smears it on the face of a sleeping child and gets that child in trouble. That's fine. He goes and kills big monsters in the forest without his parents around. See? That's fun. When big monsters come, he wheels them around and throws them in the trees. That's Krishna. He's fun. So if our idea of Krishna consciousness is be strict, whatever it is, it's not Krishna consciousness. Okay. I'm not going to have time for too long. This is a nice one. What is the best structure for a children's Bhagavatam class? I really like Aruda's new book, because she's talking here, or he or she is talking about children age 5, 6, and 7. Aruda's new book has a lot of good activities children and child success. Should they be made? We have this word made again. We have this force and made. Watch our language here. Should they be made to sit and listen, or can they be play-based learning? You can do play-based learning. And children 5, 6, and 7 can sit and listen a little bit. Look, he's sitting and listening. Now he's trying to fall asleep because he didn't. But, you know, kids 5, 6, and 7 can sit and listen. If it's a class that's interesting to them and he's sitting and listening, and this isn't even a class for him. This was a class for the adults. He's still sitting and listening. But to speak of, it's actually a class for the kids. So if you have a child-based class, certainly the children, I mean, they're sitting and listening in school when they're 5, 6, and 7, yes? Correct? Am I correct? Yes. So children can certainly sit and listen to a class by the time they're 5, 6, and 7. But you can also have some more play-based learning. You can have both. Very nice question. Really appreciate that. And how can children have fun in Krishna consciousness? Again, Krishna is fun. So if this Krishna consciousness is fun, we have lots of songs, we have lots of games, we have lots of activities. On my website, you can download our festival books and different books of fun games and activities in Krishna consciousness. And I think service for Krishna is a lot of fun. Again, if you think service for Krishna is hard work and it's just serious, then you're not really doing the service for Krishna, because Krishna's not like that. We don't have this view of God as this really old guy up in the clouds just going, "You go to heaven, you did good things in your life, but you, I don't like what you did, you go to hell. Oh, let me see your life. That's
good, good, very good life, very good, you go to hell."
That's not our idea of God. He's not this boring old guy just telling people what to hell. So it's more you can ask the question, how can we keep from having too much fun in Krishna consciousness? That's a really good question. All of our service for Krishna should be exciting and should be fun. And we have such an unlimited variety of things to do in Lord Chaitanya's movement. And Lord Chaitanya is also fun. He did some pretty wild things, I'd like to say that. Is it okay to tell my child to chant every day and remind him on and on again every day you chant? He is 6 years old. No. If he was 16, probably. But even reminding somebody on and on and on when they're 16 doesn't look. Do any of us like that? Anyone here like being reminded on and on and on and on? There's that joke you may have seen where the man says to his wife, "Of course I'm going to fix it. You don't need to remind me every 6 months." So, right, none of us like to be bugged, so children don't like to be bugged either. I suggest that you look into, there's a lot of just regular old mundane books out there about how to deal with children. There's a really good one, How to Talk So Kids Can Listen, How to Listen So Kids Can Talk. That's a very good one. Some of the books on nonviolent communication, a book on parent effectiveness training. There's a lot of other good materials, of course. Just find something that works with you and resonates with you. But it's not that the only parenting technique is, I am the parent, you are the child, you have to do what I say. If you don't do what I say, I nag you and bug you and harass you, and if you still don't listen, I hit you. Okay, or I yell at you. That's not the only way to parent the child. There are many other ways to deal with children besides something like that. So this beyond the scope of what we can talk about. But please try to educate yourself into other methods of dealing with children. People can help this question. This is a very good question, but I don't have time to get into that. So I had some other good questions, really, really good questions and really thoughtful questions that some of these are really, really good. And I'm so sorry that I didn't get a chance to answer them. So if you asked a question that I didn't get to, then I give my apologies, but we have run out of time. And hopefully next time I come to Melbourne, we can do the parenting for the Gita and other things and we get to more questions. And if you don't have a problem with Bhagavad Gita, please pick one up. We also have some other Prabhupada's books here. We have Bhagavad Gita also in various languages. And thank you very much. All glories to Shri. Who's the devotee who's selling the books? Who's signing books? Can you stand up and make yourself known? So if you'd like to get a Bhagavad Gita, just $10. If you want to be happy to sign it, please. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada.